Hey guys, welcome to the Tech Point Africa podcast. My name is Mano.
I'm Oluwani Femi.
I'm Chingu Azuduna.
And I'm Bolu.
Yeah, so guys, how are we doing?
Oh,
very
good.
Well.
Good.
I'm okay.
You might be asking that Muyiwa's voice.
Oh, yeah. Muyiwa couldn't join us today.
And it's fine. It's okay.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
you'll be back next week, unfailingly. Yeah, so we're going to make sure that, the entire internet basically is buzzing with the news of Elon and Twitter and all of that. Mm. But the European Union is doing something sneaky.
Something that could change the conversation very soon.
Mm, yeah, so what exactly are they up to now?
So it's basically called the Digital Services Act, and it's a regulation that's going to affect business for tech companies. So basically they are asking them to do a few things. So first of all, this is not yet out, the full details are not yet out in the public, but tech companies are now going to be required to do faster or quicker content moderation. So harmful content now has to be removed faster, harmful products have to be removed faster, harmful services now have to be removed faster than was previously done. They're also going to have to take stricter measures when it comes to preventing misinformation online. But probably the most interesting part is directly affecting the business for big tech companies or for tech companies generally. So the first is that these guys have to set a clear accountability framework. So usually they could just ban someone or maybe send someone off their platform, and the explanations are not so clear. But now you have to make those frameworks very clear. So how did they arrive at such a decision? But the other interesting part is targeted advertising, which has always been used. So if you check, we usually make a joke that maybe you're discussing a new sneaker with your friend, and then the next thing you go on Instagram, you start seeing ads everywhere. Yeah, so they do that with our data that we submit. Mm-hmm. So now they are being required to, in short, they're going to ban it. Targeted advertising is going to be banned to some extent.
That's like closing down their market.
Yes. So they are not going to target you based on your gender, sexual orientation, religion, or ethnicity. And these are almost everything that they
need. Apart from location, though.
Yeah, okay. I think they are still going to be, it's not yet very clear, but I think location is still going to be one of the factors they can use. But I mean, gender
metrics.
Yeah, even trying to think of what other metric they could be targeting you apart from location, maybe your online browsing habits, like the site you visit. So they just sometimes, I know they use cookies to track your activities around the internet. The web, so they'll track you based on that, and that does not really involve too much basically. So, but I'm even saying you'll be unable to target minors, which is
very important.
Very important, yes. But those other ones, gender, sexual orientation. Okay, let's say you have advertising feminine products.
Yes, exactly.
So how do you make sure
it can be popping up for
guys? So sexual orientation, religion, ethnicity, in my opinion, may not be like very huge factors when it comes to deciding who I'm targeting at, because it's not like the market for religious products is so large. And or maybe products based on where you're coming from, ethnicity. Mm. It's not that large, but gender, that's like where you start from. So the moment you can't target someone based on his or her gender or non-binary gender, whatever. Now, the moment you remove that factor from the equation, it gets a little bit tricky because it's no longer so specific. So maybe you can be, I might wake up one morning and I'm seeing ads for sanitary pads and it's useless to me. So you could probably set back the social advertising industry back significantly to when you had to depend on guesswork.
I'm wondering what Elon Musk is thinking about this right now. I'm just about to acquire Twitter, and they are basically giving a very serious hit towards a major revenue stream for Twitter. Right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
But apart from, say, social media platforms, does this affect news media in any way? There's a conversation about ad revenue already. Ad revenue for Google, Facebook, and Amazon, all those big tech companies, they're having issues with Apple's new privacy rules. Advertising is becoming a little bit more difficult. So what happens next after this?
First of all, this law is not going to be in, it won't come into effect at least until a few months.
Okay.
But let's just assume that it happens. How is it going to affect other advertisers? So I don't think much will change. I don't think much will change because they still have more precise data that can be shared. Whereas, let's say a blog, for example, doesn't have that precise data. You don't have the machine, like the processes to gather that much data. You don't have precise data that you can sell on. But to a very large extent, big tech companies have to, they still have precise data. Their advertising revenues, it will be hot. We can't say how much or by how much for now, but it will be hot. It will be hot. How significant is something we can't say yet.
Interesting.
I think I agree with Shingo's dream on that. Okay. Right? It's not as if you're... Okay, it's just like you're removing the adjective behind advertising. You're removing the adjective targeted.
Okay.
You're still going to advertise. They still have users on their platforms. They have people they are targeting. So to say, you get
millions or billions.
You get. Yeah. So I don't know if it will tank their revenue.
Yeah.
It could force them to consider other forms of advertising. And I think it opens up a whole lot of conversations around how these guys use your data. So with a report came out just recently that and supposedly an internal document from Facebook that Facebook doesn't know how to use its data. So basically they don't
they're overwhelmed.
From Vice, right?
Yes. So it looks like they are overwhelmed by the data that they are collecting. And it's interesting because these laws are expected to help them or to force them to comply to specific like practices. Now, if they are unable to control how their data works, then that's probably going to affect their abilities to conform to these privacy regulations. Because the example that was used or the analogy that was used around the data privacy issues is that imagine your data being ink in a bottle and then you pour it into a lake or into an ocean. You can't control where it flows. Now can the question the doc was asking is can you gather the ink back from the lake and now redirect it to probably specific parts of the lake? So basically it's casting a doubt on how Facebook in particular manages their data. So,
so the lake in this instance, what would the metaphor be referring to?
So it's not so clear, but it could be that they have a lot of data.
Okay.
Which ideally, so these privacy rules are saying you collect my data, you should be collecting it for a specific reason.
Okay.
So for example, you collect my phone number, why are you collecting it? Possibly for 2FA authentication. Yeah. That's all you can do with it.
Okay.
And we also know that they've collected that data to like maybe show you other people in your contact and so if you're on Facebook, people you may know and stuff like that. So they're playing on or they're using data that they collect from you. So basically this is going to require them to have a better hold on how their data works. If you're collecting, for example, let's use the previous example. If you're collecting someone's gender information, why are you collecting it?
Okay.
Do you just want to know how many men and women are on your platforms? Or do you have other plans? So that means every data you collect must be for a specific purpose. That's actually one of the principles around data privacy. Every data you collect has to have a purpose. You can't just collect random
data.
Sometimes
it might collect it with a particular purpose, then devise another purpose for it.
Yeah.
I think that is where Facebook has found itself now.
Yeah.
That's interesting. While you were talking, I just found myself rooting for Naira Land again. There was this conversation that came up yesterday on Twitter and what someone wants to acquire Naira Land for $150 million. So, but I went on Naira Land and I saw that this website is still really active and you can actually place targeted ads on Naira Land. And so that was interesting. And I'm going to link to an article on our website about what Shewa Shewa and Mark Zuckerberg have in common. Spoiler alert, Facebook and Naira Land actually started around the same time. So let us know what you think about the whole issue with
data privacy and big tech.
All of that. Yeah. Okay, so talking about privacy and data and big tech, we're in the world of web. We're not in the world of web. Bolu.
You have to. I almost said it.
We're in the world of. No, we're not. No.
We are not. We are not actually. So
we are moving into it.
Yes, we are.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yes.
And eventually.
Well, eventually, I hope, because I think
the way you're saying is like you should be deceiving yourself while it lasts.
You see, the concept of decentralization is something that you cannot easily put together. Having organizations where there's no leader and everyone is just, everything is just working on smart contracts and everybody votes for, okay, this is what will happen next, this is what will happen next. It's something that when I think about it, I'm like, will this really happen? But we've already seen it happen in different places. It's possible. Well, we might be entering the old web.
So whenever you guys talk about decentralization, I always think about history, and it sounds like the purest form of democracy.
Yeah.
But there's a particular reason why we went full circle and came back. So I feel like we're going to go decentralized, then probably come full circle and you start having individuals managing huge conglomerates. But
yes,
let's not diverse. Okay. Let's not digress ourselves. So there's something happening with NFTs.
Yes. Yeah, so there has been a phishing scam on one of the biggest NFT collections ever, the Bored Ape Yacht Club. Someone has been able to make away with $2.8 million worth of NFT.
These things are happening often these days. What's going on?
It's something that has to happen for us to really figure out how this space will work, to figure out how to actually secure this space. And I think it's bad, but it's also a way of making progress when you think about it, because there was the Axie Infinity hack last month.
I think that was
$625 million.
Wow.
And then the US government, I think to an extent, were able to track down where the hack came from. There are rumors that it came from North Korea. So in a way, it's a way to keep the space safer. So if these things keep happening, we keep knowing these are the things we need to look out for. This is where we need to like plug to know, okay, let's stop, you know, this from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the case of the Bored Ape Yacht Club, it was a phishing scam. So someone was able to get someone was able to access the Instagram account of the NFT collection and then posted fake links for people to click. People clicked and you took them, you know, to a random website where they had to give access to their wallet, and the person was able to like make away with so much NFTs. Mm. 91 NFTs in total that were stolen.
Interesting. So they hacked Web3 by hacking Web2.
That's a wonderful way to put it.
Okay.
That's a wonderful way to... I was telling Precious about it, you know, this afternoon, and you know, I was quick to, you know, say it was, we said blockchain is not hackable. It was actually the fault was from Instagram, because the page said they were on a two-factor authentication, so they didn't understand how the account was able to be hacked, and they said they're in talks with Instagram to figure out how
Instagram, come and defend yourself.
Yes.
Okay, but in this instance, to use your words against you, don't you think these kind of things need to happen so we can figure out areas we can block in Web2? Sorry, not Web3.
Yes.
Now, you have to learn lessons from Web2 that you will try not to replicate the mistakes in Web3.
Yes, it's the same lessons we are learning that we're still going to learn in Web3, isn't it? So everything you describe is what we already do in cybersecurity, right? Cloud computing, you are building very huge infrastructures to secure your data, and when the hack inevitably happens, you learn from it.
Exactly.
Unplug. Is that not basically the same thing?
It is actually. So I think it's still going to keep happening for a while. We are still going to see it happen for a while. I think this is one of the biggest phishing scams we've seen for some time. I think there was one last year on Twitter where someone was able to get access to accounts of like really top people on Twitter and made away with millions of dollars. At least they caught the person. So in this instance, I think it's a Web3 arc through Web2. So I think if we can track the footpath, if we can track the digital footprint on Web2, then maybe we will.
Interesting. So in case you are confused with Web2, Web3 stuff, Bolido actually just published an article about making sense of the Web3 buzz. So it helps to understand where we are coming from, so you can also understand where we are going to.
Yeah.
So Bolu, we have a Web3 conference.
Yes, we have what I would describe as the biggest Web3 Web3 conference in Africa right now. So mm-hmm. it's coming up next month, May 21st, and we'll be bringing some of the biggest Web3 experts on the continent to really help you make sense of what this whole Web3 thing means. Where do you fit in? Where, what can you do? What careers can you start looking out for in case Web3, as it is now, Web3 is going out of, might be going out of existence.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's prepare ourselves, you know. Let's start preparing ourselves. What's in Web3 that I can take advantage of? There'll be NFT artists that have really made a lot of money in this space. They'll be coming, talking to us about how to really make money in this space. There are people from the DeFi areas talking about how to make money with decentralized finance, borrowing, insurance, different kinds of things in the area of decentralized finance. And we have people from the DAO part of things, decentralized autonomous organizations, explaining all these things to us. And I think it's really going to be an amazing time. And we'll be announcing our speakers today. We have an amazing lineup of speakers for you today. And once you see that, you really know what to expect from the event.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. But sorry for putting you on the spot. Are we going to have anyone in the field of aquaculture? Because I saw a tweet yesterday of someone complaining that mangoes are wasting in Benue, and I felt pain personally. So about was it last week?
Yeah. Yes, it was last week.
Insuring farmers against bad climate. So do we have any Web3 solution for the culture and stuff like that?
Okay, yes, I think we have their Web3 solutions for agriculture. Like you mentioned, EtherRisk, and mm-hmm. what they are trying to do is provide insurance for farmers using blockchain technology. And it's a very interesting development. And
yeah, I was just thinking how funny it will be convincing farmers that... I think maybe they will just leave us the part of we are using blockchain to solve this problem and just say we are solving your problem.
Exactly.
Because as it were now, solutions like in Web2, like mm-hmm. you can't even explain it to these farmers mm-hmm. and they will get it. You just tell them I'm solving your problem. Yeah, please
yes.
go on.
Which is actually what makes the EtherRisk solution very interesting mm. because farmers don't really need to know how this thing works. Mm. In the way they structured the solution, they don't need to know anything about blockchain or the solution you are trying, the way you are trying to provide the solutions for them. Mm. So what it does do is, once farmers buy its blockchain insurance, right? Mm-hmm. Blockchain crop insurance, actually. So what they actually do is, once the farmer buys their seed for planting, inside the sack, there's a USSD code. So mm-hmm. once they send that USSD code with their phone, they are automatically insured mm-hmm. against bad climate, drought, things like that. So once the farmer sends that, he immediately gets the geolocation of that farmer is then located. And then if it turns out that, okay, if you insure the seeds against drought, for example, the geolocation and satellite data confirms that, okay, this farmer didn't actually get rain, so he needs to be indemnified. And then they pay out the insurance money through his mobile phone that he used to send the USSD code.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there's a lot of tech going on behind the scenes. That's quite interesting. We're going to link to the story on this episode, and kindly check it out. But one important thing, I think we have a hackathon going on.
Yes,
right?
yes.
So if you have a solution to save the mangoes in Benue,
yes, very important.
Yeah, I think Chim Gazim might even fund you. Chim Gazim loves mangoes.
Yes, I will.
Yeah.
Okay, so how much?
Why are you seeing this money?
Chim Gazim has money. Yeah.
How much is up for grabs?
Okay, up for grabs. Total cash prize is $2,500.
Okay, that's money.
Spread the word.
Spread the word. And yeah, let's know what you think. And if you have any solutions that you think would be interesting for any sector, trust me, the blockchain space is so big. So any solution you have, come to the hackathon and pitch. And if you're very, very curious about how this whole thing works, please just try and gain this knowledge. Don't worry about all the money Bolu was mentioning. How to make money on it. Just come and learn. Okay. So yeah, that's quite interesting. Okay. So talking about agriculture and solving Nigeria's feeding or Africa's feeding crisis, Ghanaian agritech startup just raised an amount of money.
Yeah, Farmer Line is the name of the startup, and surprised we are hearing about them. They launched since 2013.
Wow.
And they just raised $12.9 million in a pre-series A round.
Pre-series A.
Yes. What they are doing is interesting, actually. Right. So they help agribusiness know how to serve farmers. So agribusinesses are the ones that sell seedlings, they sell fertilizers, they just sell the products that farmers need. Farmerline has like an AI, a supply chain intelligence.
Waiting for that.
Yeah.
I was waiting for either AI or blockchain.
So, right, okay. Yeah, it is needed. So they have that tech that helps, like it has data of farmers, right? Okay. So it helps them to predict who needs what. At what time he gets. So he knows where to target, say, fertilizers at a particular time, maybe fertilizers for cassava plant, right? So you know at which season this should go to where he gets. So the solution, merge data, that's the name of the solution. And I think I love that, right? When agribusinesses sign up on their platform, they have access to this information and they know what to store, what to have in as their, what's it called? Inventory. In their warehouses, in their inventory, what they should stop producing and all. And it's nice. And interestingly, this not only used by farmers, they have government and non-governmental organizations and other agribusinesses using the solution. And because they make it available for third-party licensing, like they are, it's used in 26 countries.
No, they're not just in Ghana.
Yes, okay, they are in Ghana. They're actually based in Ghana.
Okay.
So the plan is to expand
in
Ghana before going to neighboring Ivory Coast.
Okay.
But because they allow third parties to license the technology, so it's used in many other countries. And governments even use it. And it's interesting that this is coming to Ghana because the majority of agri-tech investment have mostly been going to Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Apollo Agriculture and Trigger Foods, I believe.
Even Itharisk.
It's in Kenya too. So it's interesting that this is coming to Ghana. And Africa is the thing about Africa having a lot of problems. And it's where there are problems that solutions come to, right? And agri-tech, aside fintech, I used to expect that agri-tech should get as much buzz as fintech is getting. You get, because aside financial inclusion problem, agriculture is the next thing. And
the hungry continent.
It's not like we are hungry. No.
We are hungry.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe it's the supply problem. It's a supply problem. But yes, we are producing, right? But I don't know where we got it wrong, but we are really producing. But we are still importing food. Yes, we are hungry. Yeah. I agree with that. But still, that's what I'm trying to say, that agri-tech should get as much buzz as fintech is getting. And it should get as much investment as it is, because they are solving problems from people that are helping farmers to get their product to end users, to investment tech in agriculture, to people that supply, say, tractor for rent and
storage solutions as well.
Exactly, storage, like warehousing, helping farmers to keep their. So I'm expecting that African agri-tech sector should get investment, a lot of investment, not people.
In an ideal world, that's what will happen.
Yeah, so I actually understand why. I get why agri-tech doesn't gain as much attention as fintech or other flashy sectors. It's very hands-on. You have to be a bit more hands-on than
Lot more hands-on, actually.
Yeah, it reminds me of...
You can't be somewhere else and then you're running an agri-tech startup. And a lot of the time, just providing an online solution may not cut it.
Yeah.
You also have to be on ground.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because these people are saving.
Yeah, they're not exactly literate. For example, let's say you're doing a tractor. I think I heard of one, a tractor sharing platform, like a couple of years back. I thought it was an impressive idea. But then when you see that a lot of Nigerians, especially in the south of Nigeria, for example, a lot of our farms are like smallholder farms. So does it make any sense for a smallholder farmer to hire a tractor? Not so much. So how do
and
you now
have a family of 72?
Oh boy.
Yeah. And then
that's
a very
an exaggeration.
Small
we don't
land.
Give birth like that in Africa.
Actually, we do. I've heard of a man. I read of a man in a newspaper. It is something children.
Oh
but yeah,
God.
That's by the way. So like you need a lot of hands-on, like your approach has to be like totally hands-on.
Okay.
You have to do a lot of education. You also have to ensure that your machinery is okay. So I spoke with Relief last year, and one of the issues was building their own machinery. And machinery, they import some of their parts from China and the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the peculiarity of what they are building, it's not so easy to like get specific tools or specific
parts
for what you're building. So a lot of the time you buy parts and then you have to refashion them into what you want. So that's like a lot of money that you need to invest, and you may not even get it like upfront. It's like investing in education, for example.
You your don't future get to is in heaven.
Exactly.
Your reward is in heaven.
Your reward is in heaven. You don't get to see you don't see like
immediate
2 million
returns.
People or immediate returns instantly. So yeah.
So we'll never have sense. People really, do you think people will like really give agriculture attention anytime soon? Because it's harder to do. And personally for me too, I'll prefer to be able to stay in the UK and build solutions for Nigeria.
why can't you build
well,
it from
solving,
Nigeria?
Solving the hard problems now. Actually gives you a lot more money. So you invest a lot of money up front, definitely.
Okay.
But at some point, you're going to recoup your investments. It may not be as outrageous as you get from other sectors.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I think, so this is just a guess. I'm assuming that in the next 5 years, you would have built out like fintech solutions. There's a reason why fintech is hot. 95% of payments are still offline and in cash. So that's like a very huge market.
Okay.
So in the long run, when we've probably captured at least half of that market and brought them online, as that works. So let's just say 10 years, if things go well, 10 years, that should happen. Then we can now focus on other sectors. Other and then sector. The good thing is you make your returns. Founders, we've seen a lot of founders that are funding other founders. So they're making money from their businesses and they're channeling this money back. So as we see more impact in fintech and more returns in fintech, it can be channeled into other places.
So fintech is the elder brother that will go and make money and bring back home.
As it were, the money.
Hopefully it does that.
Okay, yeah. I guess there's a lot to unpack here. And yeah, there's so many moving parts in the startup space that one thing needs to work well for another thing.
For others, yeah.
To work. So if the agricultural side, the logistics and supply in that sector is solved, and financial services is solved, maybe e-commerce will become easier. Other sectors will be able to thrive. So this building this tech to connect this tech, or building this tech to connect businesses with this user, all those other things. Yeah, so interesting stuff. And that's been an interesting one. Are we missing anything? Did anything else happen?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay, that's cool. So thank you for listening to this episode. Thank you for staying with us to the end. Don't forget, this is the TechPoint Africa podcast. You can reach us, you can give us feedback on podcast@techpoint.africa, or you can tweet at us with the hashtag TechPoint Africa podcast. But if you're listening to us for the first time, or if you've been listening to us for a while now and you've not been sharing, where can you find this podcast, Femi?
Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Spotify,
Stitcher, and Podcast Addict. Yeah, Muyiwa is not here, but we have to honor Podcast Addict. thank you so much, and see you guys next week.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.